Hi, and welcome to the Sacred You podcast, where we create sacred community together. I'm Rachel Goodwin, channel healer and author who loves to empower you on your spiritual path. I offer original and new ways, and my work with Sarah, daughter of the Magdalene, and with the New Earth is pioneering and leading edge. If you're ready to burst through to the next level, come over to my website, rachelgoodwin.dk, and see all the amazing things that I have to offer you. So I've just been listening back to the conversation that me and Jeremiah had. It is so good. If you interested at all in Egyptian stuff, you are gonna love this. I think there is a whole magical like underlying thread that came together at the end, and make sure you listen to the end. Jeremiah does some beautiful stuff with the sistrum and reads us an Egyptian hymn. You're really gonna enjoy this.
Ahu heia valeanoi e kahaliko puakukui kuhia o kaunaia a kahapu kumoninei pihi kui kahimana ho I kahapili koluaia Ea ke kaula lo pihana e koho puhu ka palili ai. Ha ina mahi ka puana e kahaliko puha kuhukui.
So, hello everyone. We've got another episode of Sacred You with Jeremiah today, and it's all about Egypt. Woo! How are you doing?
I am so well. I'm so thankful to be connected with you once again.
Yeah.
It's our, I think, third time meeting in this way, and it's so fun to reflect on the times we've had before and how things keep growing for both of us and for everyone in these communities that are connected to our Sara Tamar, to the Rose lineages and the Magdalene traditions. We're all just, so much is happening, and it's a joy to connect.
Yeah, it is. And like, I really wanted to like quiz you all about your Egypt trip, and I just knew it'd be so interesting, like everybody would want to listen to it, so it would be a waste not to record it, Jeremiah.
Thank you. Well, I love to talk about it, and as both of us being Leos, we love to share about our experiences.
Do you think that's what it is? It's because we're Leos.
I think it plays, you know, a part in it. I really do. Yeah. And today, so I've been following the Egyptian religious calendar since I've been back from Egypt. And today is the presiding Neter, or deity, or divine essence. Today is Sekhmet, who is, which is lovely. So today is, and I have her here with me, a beautiful Sekhmet I brought back. And of course, she's an aspect of Hathor, or Hathor, as it's pronounced in Egypt. And the trinity of those three is, it's Hathor, Sekhmet, and Bast. So we have those three, but today, and they're all the daughter of the sun, the Eye of Ra. So here we are in summer with Sekhmet, with the lion. Let's go.
Oh, it's beautiful. Love it. Been working with Bast and Bastet a bit recently because of the Blue Rose stuff that we've been doing. And she turned up for me in a dream years ago. Yeah, but I might tell you a bit about it later.
I would love to hear. She's coming a bit more into my life recently, and there's something special about her.
Yeah. Because so I was talking about this in the Blue Rose group, and I was saying the thing is,
there's a lot of stuff that is obviously lost about the gods and goddesses, yes. You know? And also the way we interpret it, like us modern people, we catch on to something and we say, oh, this goddess, it means this, this and this. And we're very kind of concrete about it. And actually, a lot of the time, it's not the whole picture at all, because things are interpreted very differently, aren't they? Depending on the culture that you're coming from.
Well said, well said. So my Egyptian experience was led under Kathleen McGowan, who is, you know, we all know and we all love. She's really someone that has devoted her life to studying these traditions and as they pertain and connect to the Magdalene traditions, which is so powerful. And no one's really doing the depth of on-the-ground research that she is. And so she was my guide there, and her and I are becoming closer, and it's exciting to... Anyway, so a lot of what I'm going to share today has come from her wealth of wisdom and knowledge, and also her husband, who is a native Egyptian. He grew up literally next to the Temple of Seti I in Abydos and would spend his childhood evenings in the temple. So... And all the beautiful souls that were on this trip. So it's the things that I share today really come from that collective wisdom group of knowledge. But one thing I want to say to what you said is that, well, the first thing we learned in Egypt, that Egypt is this and. So, you know, you look at a hieroglyph for the sun, you know, the circle with the dot. Of course, it's the sun. But it's Ra. And what is Ra? All the things of Ra. And Ra also splits into different versions of himself. Amun Ra, Ra Harakhti. And then what is also... The sun is warmth. It's nurturance. It has a feminine presence of giving life and a masculine... So, you know, the ands of these divine essences. The sort of... I think... I'll be so bold to say immature places of us want to put these things into boxes, kind of the kid parts of us that want to understand and make sense of the world, which is beautiful. But then I think we have that, and then we have to release the attachments of that to allow the full spectrum of these rays of the divine to be that, and to let go of maybe preconceived projections or understandings.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, the way we're taught knowledge now is in a very left-brained, rational way, where you have, like, checklists.
Yes.
So-and-so means this, 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 and this. Very concrete, very rational. And actually, that's not how people used to learn about the gods and the goddesses. They heard stories. They were created rituals for people to experience it through their senses, not through the brain. Like, no, not through the mind. I mean, I did my priestess training about 20 years ago, and I did not read a book about the goddess for at least 15 years after I did, because it was a felt experience. And that's not to say that, you know, there weren't things shared about the goddesses we were experiencing, qualities, for example, but it's a very different way of learning than, yes, yeah, looking it up on the internet.
It is. And I just actually spent time this week with Kathleen and one of our soul sisters who we discovered in Egypt, and we were talking about, you know, everyone wants to be Isis, you know, everyone feels drawn to Isis. Isis has a sister. And not many people know her name. Isis' sister is Nephthys. And it's the two of them that resurrects Osiris together. It's not Isis by herself. She can't do it without her sister. And, for instance, Isis is really kind of the sister that's in the light. She's out there doing the work, and people is known for the work. Where Nephthys is the dark one, sort of like our Black Madonna. She's underneath doing the magic from the place of... She doesn't need people to know her name or be acknowledged for that. And that makes me go right to Mary Magdalene, you know, and Mother Mary. There's sort of those two. And again, I'm not boxing them in, but we can use that, those sort of, this kind of archetypal discussion to invite greater wholeness. Because if we decide, because yes, we have these, the, these, beings that we're drawn to, and that's beautiful. But to only, it's again, it's kind of childish to say, well, I'm just going to devote myself to ISIS. This is my perspective. Because then you're missing out on Nephthys. You're missing out on all the others so that you can be whole. It's wholeness that we're after. And that's what Egypt really took me by the being. It was like, come be whole, but claim it yourself. Don't sit here and crawl on your knees in front of us. Stand up next to us. Stand up next to us. Do the work with us. And don't worry if you're acknowledged or not. You know, Mary Magdalene and Nephthys didn't care if we all knew their names. Yeah. I mean, maybe they did. But that kind of thing, like, you know, service. Oh, I sat in front of, we went to see the mummies, which wasn't thinking about the mummies. But I stood at the feet of Nefertari, who is considered the first god's wife. And if you guys don't know about the god's wife, that's something to dig into because you could say they are the beginnings of the Magdalene traditions, these women who married the divine and were this source of very huge feminine power where the rulers would come to them for guidance and for blessings. Anyway, I stood at her feet and she started talking to me and she's like, get it, join the ranks, stop, you know, like, you know, it's beautiful, the devotion, this and that, but we got work to do.
Yes, exactly.
Sorry, I'm feeling the second. Rah.
What was it that prompted you to go in the first place? Did you just have a feeling or did something happen or why did you go?
So my whole awakening is because of Mary Magdalene. And so I think for me, she's kind of, you know, taken me along the path. And then it was as soon as I started to read and feel that those traditions, in the early Christian traditions as they relate to Egypt, there was a spark there that started to burn. And then it just became a knowing that tradition, we all have the traditions that we feel closest to at certain points of our life. And I really, it could be because those past lives are ready to come in those gifts are ready to come forward for whatever agreements and purposes you've chosen for. So I think this is my Egyptian period. Maybe it's my whole period. I don't know. But I knew that I had to go and to reclaim or reunite, remember parts of myself that were directly connected to Egypt. So it's all in divine timing because it was a trip that I couldn't... It was a big trip. And my grandparents, after they passed, who really were sort of my spiritual and physical kind of, you know, parents as well. In addition to my parents, I inherited some of their estate, which allowed me to go on this trip. So it's this kind of gifting, you know, the gifts of the soul in the physical and the spiritual that allowed me to take this trip. And that's all kind of came at the right time and to be with this the right group of people in the right places. And when we really surrender, like you said, to the feminine knowing of when it's time for these things, then the magic really begins.
It does. And yeah, I totally resonate what you're saying about going on these trips because, you know, someone's gifted you the money and they've died. Both of my Hawaii trips, the first one was paid for by my mother passing and my second one was by my father passing. And both of them, I went out on my own. And the fact that, like, having, you know, so recently lost a parent and I was quite young as well, it gave me that feeling of, well, if not now, when? You know, because I could die tomorrow. So even though I was really scared to death to travel on my own, I just had that inner, like, I have to go. Yes. And it gave me the courage to do it. Because when you really face death, like really in the face, other things kind of like, well, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I love that. I really feel, and that happened on the trip in a few different ways where I start to see our souls kind of, you know, you could imagine it above us weaving, you know, like the great weavers, that those traditions exist in a lot of spiritual traditions, but the great weavers who are and that so much love. Where down, where here it might be perceived as something kind of very dramatic or full or traumatic. But up there, it's like, I'm going to do this, even if it looks like death, as a gift for you. It's always, I see the souls kind of like bowing to each other. Yeah. Like, this is going to be hard down there, but up here, it's this huge offering. And sometimes that can look like so many things. Even a catastrophic fight between two people, a disagreement, can be the soul's way of offering a huge offering of service to the other soul. And so, yes, if we can stay centered enough to receive it as such and then ride the waves of the emotional body and nervous system, we can receive these gifts, in which I think that's why we chose to be in this density, to receive all of the gifts.
Well, it's certainly an interesting ride, isn't it? Oh, dear. But, yeah, I went to Egypt when I was about 24, I think, and that came about because, I mean, yeah, I've always been a bit of an adventurer given half a chance, and I was in my first year maybe of training as a nurse in the UK, and I made friends with two Australian girls, and I don't know if you've met many Australians, but they liked a backpack. And they said to me, oh, we're going to Egypt. Do you want to come? I was like, what do you mean you're going to Egypt? Oh, yeah, yeah, we're going for 16 days and we're going to stay in hostels. And because I was like, because obviously we had no money. We were like students. I mean, we got like this amount of money per month and we worked as well. But it was just enough to eat. And they were like, oh, well, you know, you only need to pay for your flight and it's really cheap there. And I was like, oh, I don't know, I'll see. So I asked my mum if she could, like, give me a bit of money. And she gave me some money. And she said, this is from my running away fund, Rachel. So make sure you use it well. So I took it and off I went to Egypt. And just before I went, so this is where it all starts to sound a bit like a soap opera. It's a bit like EastEnders. Before I went, so I was going out with this guy who was a charge nurse. He was a mental health nurse as well, which is what I was training in. And he was really gorgeous, honestly. If you saw him, he had this, like, in a certain part of Scotland, you get this quite dark skinned. With this almost black hair. He was so gorgeous and these brown eyes. And I was totally, totally in love with him. But we were always having dramas. I mean, it was just like drama, drama, drama. And before I went, I found him in bed with another student nurse. And I was just like, oh, that, and we were living together. I was, oh, you know, I was completely heartbroken. And how could you do this? And betrayal, betrayal. And you've lied and all this. So I went off to Egypt in that kind of frame of mind. I mean, I was so distraught. And, you know, this is long before my spiritual days, shall we say. I had nothing to anchor me. I hadn't had any therapy at this point, I don't think. No therapy at that point. So this is me completely, like, the raw tumbled stone. Well, no, I hadn't even been tumbled. The raw gem, shall we say. And off I went to Egypt. And I tell you, as soon as I got there, I felt different. And as we went around, because we travelled from one end of Egypt to the other and then back up the Nile and, you know, went to all these places, I did change. And although I wasn't in my spiritual place, so I didn't sort of visit, like, tuning into things and stuff like that, I was still very, very sensitive. And the most amazing part of that journey for me was when we went back up. So we travelled all the way down from Cairo down to the bottom of Egypt and then went up, I don't know how far, like on a little sailing boat. I think they're called felucca. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we slept on this boat and we ate on this boat. And I remember waking up in the morning because the breeze was starting to come up and it was like just like caressing my, tickling my face. And I woke up and I just looked around me and everybody else was still asleep. And there was this incredible magic in that moment that's never left me. And I can't put it into words, Jeremiah. I can't tell you why it was magical. It just was. And, you know, I don't know what was like coming around me, but it was just, it was that dawn energy, and it was like that River Nile, you know, it's a sacred river, isn't it? I mean, she's a goddess. She was like holding me in her hands. And when I went back to the UK after that, I was like, yeah, I definitely picked up some soul pot.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes. I love that you brought up the Nile, because so the deity or the Neter, and so Neter is the name that the Egyptians call, they didn't call them gods or goddesses, they called them Neters or Neteru, which is where we get the word nature. And so they really did see them as aspects of the divine, you know, and so you would, you know, go to the temple of, like, duality, so to, for example, it's the temple of Sobek and Horus, you have the dark and the light, the crocodile and the falcon. But you're going there for specific purposes, to experience that ray of the divine, to work through whatever you're looking to work towards. And of course, then, you know, there are the ones that are believed to have had a human life, like Isis, Osiris, Nephthys, Set, and Horus the Younger. But some of these other ones are just these primordial energies that were given, you know, qualities. Anyway, so that's something to know about the Egyptians, so the Neters. So the Neter that presides over the Nile is called Hapi. And Hapi is both male and female. And he's depicted as such. Half of his body is female, or their body is female, and the other half is male. And there is this theme about gender comes up. And we've had this conversation in different ways together before on the podcast. But every day I was on the Nile, I would give thanks to Hapi for just this, that creative potential of being in the center of both of the polarities, and how beautiful to hold that in the water. And I love them. And yeah. And I also learned just recently from Kathleen that when you were to go serve at the temple, if you were going to go be a priest or priestess, once you were in the temple, you had no gender. You weren't called priest or priestess. You were genderless, which I think is huge. It's huge because it's
that.
Right?
I love that.
Yeah. So it's time to kind of, yes, let's work through the alchemies of our gender, but then let's invite, you know, when you're ready, always in honor of this container and all its magic. But then let's open ourselves to this place of, you know, the center of the figure eight, the center of the polarities.
Let's do that again. Let's make a new word that means priest, priestess. And yeah. Also for sister brotherhood, one word, just one word for each that means both, because it feels divisive,
right?
To differentiate.
It does. And we have to honor those. Again, there's a magic and a polarity and initiation through each side of the pole. But then we have, I mean, you can feel it in the New Earth energies, and stuff is really rolling, you know?
Yeah. So because there's a freedom for me. There's a freedom in that word, because actually, when you look at each of us, we're all really gender fluid within different parts of our life, you know? Like, in some things, I'm really masculine. Other things, I'm totally feminine. And just to be able to just feel like you can just flow around and not be like, no, you're supposed to, you know, I have a real thing about freedom, and I really hate being put into a box in any way. I'm just like, no, I'm not having it, no.
Yes, and it takes us back to that conversation. If we put the divine, the aspects of the archetypes of the divine into boxes, then we do it to ourselves, as above, so below, so within, all of that. So yes, so as we approach the temple of Isis, let's approach her without expectation or without projection. Allow her magic to come and serve us as we serve that aspect of the divine. And in through that, we become whole. And it's that, that's what we're all going towards, is we want to be our fullest expression. Right now, we're recording this in the portal of the summer solstice. It's just a few days. You know, I think yesterday was midsummer. So this is appropriate that, like, to talk about this into all of these spiritual technologies, is the invitation is into wholeness of who you truly are. So yes, use the playground of the structures of, you know, again, the sort of the childhood nature of, okay, let's, what does this mean to be male or female? And then let's, what does it mean to be neither? What does it mean to be empty? For when we're empty, then we can be filled, you know, with our truest, deepest self. So that's all really there still in Egypt, if you have ears to hear, kind of thing. Yeah, and I mean, in the Temple of Isis, we did this is Philae in southern Egypt, and we had a sunrise ceremony just for our group. And we started in it's a chapel dedicated to Hathor outside of the temple where we did a meditation as the sun was rising. And, you know, it's just all the magic, and you're up at 4 a.m., so you're just, you know, you're a bit, like, not quite in your body because it's just, you know, you're tired. So everyone's, you know, filing into the temple, and I was really taking my time, and I got to the steps of the temple and turned to face the temple and just started weeping. And this, you know, this being of my life who I would say it was probably a female body, but at that point she's all of it. We'll call her a priestess because we don't have that word yet. She walked into my body and she was like, we're home. And now we have work to do. So yeah, get some tears out, but then get your ass into the Holy of Holies. We've got to sing because that's what we did. So yeah, to feel those parts of yourself come back as different genders or different expressions of the spectrum. Yeah, you got to be open to that. We can't be attached. Egypt will invite you to become unattached in a lot of ways, not only spiritually, but in the 3D. It's just one of these places that will push you. And that's good. That's good if you're ready.
Yeah. And I know it's a place that a lot of people get called to, and then they get, you know, activated. Like, you know, things get woken up inside them in some way.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, there's a lot going on.
How are things there, like, politically now, just to sort of go back to, like, the human beings? So I remember when we went, that it was like, don't think it was recommended by the embassy to go. I don't know how it is these days. How is it these days?
I don't know the subtleties, but sort of a general picture, it's quite safe for Westerners. When you go further north and into the desert, you because of the Arab Spring, that sort of civil war that happened a while back, there's agreements made that there's something with America, but I don't know if that bleeds over into other Western countries, but you have to have armed guards when you go into the desert. So, you know, when we got off the boat that day to go to Dendara to see, you know, Hathor's temple, or go to Abydos to see the Seti, the first temple in the Syrian, you know, we had a full-on armed escort into the desert because of the history of that particular war and how it was very unsafe. But that's all over. However, those protections are still there. And then Egypt really values tourists because that's such a lifeline in terms of economics. So tourists are quite, you know, cherished in that way. And so it does feel safe. There is, you know, it's the culture of wanting you to buy from them is strong. So that's something you have to wade through. You know, you come out of the temple and you're sort of buzzing, and then, you know, then you have to decide if you want to shop or not and what kind of shopping experience you're willing to have. And so if you're into that, the games of that, because it's a fun game. And this is what I learned about that, the people in that vocation, is they are incredible energy readers because they've been doing it since they were, you know, children, basically. And so if you internally shift your energy that you might be interested in a scarf, they will know. And because sometimes it's fun. You can be like, I'm invisible. I'm not going to shop. And they will, you know, if you really hold to that, they'll leave you alone. It's almost like they don't see you. But if you, you know, just internally, like, maybe I want that statue. Oh, they feel it. They are incredible energy readers on all levels, which I thought was kind of fun to experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I can remember that. I would like to go back one day. I think I'd have to go back at the time of year where it's at its coolest.
Yes.
I could tolerate a lot more heat in my 20s than I can now in my 50s.
Yes, yes. In Cairo, I was there in April. In Cairo, it was beautiful. It would be cool mornings, like you needed a sweater. And it would get hot in the middle of the day, and then it would cool down in the evenings. That was very pleasant. In the south, it was more full on hot days. And you would, had the things over the head. You know, as you see people, you really do need... And thankfully, you know, they encourage you to be respectful of the culture, so to be covered up, which is nice to not feel like your skin is just... Because I'm more of a like tank top and shorts kind of guy because of where I live. But yeah, over there, to be more covered actually did feel good to not be roasting in the sun the whole time. But yeah, it's a part of the initiation to be with Ra so strongly.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because, you know, my name's Rachel.
Yes.
Very, very often when I type my name, because I'm doing a capital R, I get a capital A as well. And then I have to go back and, like, you know, put my name. I do that. I do that all the time. Just constantly. I'm looking at Ra, 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 you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ra is around. He is the overarching, well, there's so many layers. One Netter that I really fell in love with was Nut. Nut is the mother sky goddess who is, she's beautiful. She's made of the stars and kind of looks like she's doing downward dog. And then her counterpart is Geb, who is, it's interesting to have a father earth and a mother sky. You know, I love that it's a sort of the opposite of some of our other traditions. And, yeah, they have quite the love affair, but she is just gorgeous. And so every day she births Ra and then she swallows him in the evening. So, you know, this cycle that makes me think of, there's so much to say, but like Nekhbet is another goddess Netter that I fell in love with. She's the really grandmother energy. She's the vulture goddess, and she's on every roof. And what's so special about her is that she transmutes death, sort of like our mother Nut in a way. So she eats death, ingests death, transforms it into life, which is the egg. And then the egg, you know, of course, has to birth itself. So you have like all these incredible, wow, the whole cycle of life and the magic and alchemy of life within one, you know, archetypal being. So she's there powerfully for those who are ready to receive that too. I mean, she's always, again, over you in the temples. And all the head, you know, a lot of the crowns will begin with the Nekhbet crown before you'll have like the, you know, the crown of serpents and then the Hathor horns and the solar disc. So often you'll have the Nekhbet crown first.
Okay. Yeah. I have an Isis statue that I bought in Glastonbury lots of years ago, and when I did buy her, the person selling her to me went into a long explanation about how her horns were sort of more Hathor and was a later incarnation of her, and she's got these gorgeous wings. I just really really love those, like those wings, you know. And I was like, it was all a bit lost on me. I was like, okay, thank you. because these, you know, they've been around for such a long time. They went through so many different, like, they evolved, didn't they?
They did. Yeah, they transform. And one of the soul sister, Melissa Seaman, that I connected with, and she's lovely. She's an oracle who helps people channel their wisdom for channels to have, you know, successful lives. And she's been initiated in the Apache Native American traditions, and where the vulture is like the symbol of prophecy. And so, you know, which relates to the Egyptian, this grandmother kind of, you know, so it's interesting how these indigenous cultures will often have the same beings or animal, you know, or archetypes or totems have similar things, which is really, was really cool to witness and to learn.
It's just wonderful that there's people like Kathleen who are just like dedicating so much of their lives to like finding out kind of the real stuff about it, you know?
So I've been most excited to tell you about a place called Kalapsha, and it's in the south as well. It's this temple on the Nile, and going into it, Kathleen said, no one comes here. You know, they don't think it's really worth it, but she's like, I love it, and I'm excited to take you guys. So I didn't really have didn't know too much what's going on other than that down in the south, it's the Nubian area. So sometimes the netters or the gods or goddesses sort of change or morph a bit to reflect the culture of this place. So we go into, first they also had a beautiful Hathor chapel outside, which was great to see, but we went into the temple and we're taking it in. And before Kathleen had said anything, I saw this Trinity sitting carved into the wall. And I was like, that's a Trinity. You know, of course, we have the famous Trinity in Egypt is Isis, Osiris, and Hathor, Horus the Younger. So there's different Horuses I learned. That's we can talk about if we need to, but there's sort of Horus the Younger, which of course that, you know, it rhymes with, you know, Mother Mary and Yeshua, you know, all these, it kind of rhymes. We have that connection. Okay, so I see this Trinity on the wall, carved into the wall, and I was like, that is a female in the center. That is not a male third, you know, that's not a male child in the center. Again, now we're going back to playing with gender because it's important in this context to have a Trinity where the third magic is not represented as male, it's represented as female. So this Trinity is Khnum. Khnum is the creator god with the ram's horns, sort of the one he shapes. He's the one who's in the clay. That kind of thing comes from him, this, like, you know, creating from the clay, from the earth. And then Satet is the mother, and she's a Nile warrior goddess. And, of course, she's connected to Sirius, just as Isis and Nephthys are, because Sirius is the star that is connected to the flooding of the Nile, right? Mm-hmm. The waters. Yeah. And then the holy child is called Anuket. And so here we have a female Horus, if you will, or a female, you know, version of, and it's just right away, I was like, Kathleen, that's our Sara Tamar. This is where it starts. And she's like, yep. This is where it starts. So these, you know, I mean, whatever. The energy that I felt from it is this archetypal place where this tradition of having, you know, the oneness come in that body, in that presentation. It was healing for me to be in that presence. And she also really holds this center place of her parents. She's also called like the Eye of Ra, just as Hathor, Sekhmet are. Okay. She's also, she's connected to Bast and Hathor and Isis and Nephthys. She has a crown of ostrich feather. She holds the scepter and the ankh, just as all the other powerful beings. But she is the center of the masculine and feminine in that tradition down in the south. And it was just so healing to be in their presence. I was like, this was worth the trip just to meet Anuket.
Wow. I got shivers when you said about the Trinity. Straight away, I got right? Shivers. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, to have the golden child in this, you know, it's so often in so many traditions, a different gender. So to have it, and she really kind of feels, she's powerful. And so to tell you this, she has one hand that she's holding hands with her creator parents. But her, let me think of this, her right hand has her father's hand over her heart. She's holding his hand over her heart. And then her mother's hand, she's just holding next to her side. So it's this. She's really coming from this place of the power of who she is and the, you know, the receptivity of who she is, you know, the vastness. It was powerful. And, you know, they've been, you know, hacked apart and you know, because the early Christians did a number on the temples. But there's the power. It's still there. It's still there. You can feel her and the wisdom.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I love about, you know, the fact that those of us who are sensitive to those things and drawn towards them, we are going and studying these things again. Yeah. But it's not just from what's external, it's coming from the inside, you know, we're channeling the information, we're intuiting the information, we're journeying on the information, and all this stuff is coming yes. out. And yeah, it's very much how it was with my Norse studies. It's there's quite a lot of information about the Old Norse, and when you add that to journeying and meditating and working with things every day, and it becomes just incredible, and it becomes something that is for today. It's for us, you yes. know. We're like reweaving this ancient stuff into this is the new age. This is what we need right now. But yet, it is that ancient stuff, like come again. And yeah, I'm really aware since working with the Blue Rose how it is. Everything is ancient. And being born in a new way, you know, I'm like, wow.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The idea of, the ancients. And when I've been sitting in channel recently, what keeps coming up is like dream the dream that hasn't been dreamt before. Can you hold the space for that?
Yeah.
You know, instead of recreating the past as these ancient technologies, these ancient wisdoms come forth, don't try to just recreate the last golden age or your idea of what it was. Dream your, that's what the divine wants. The divine does not want to repeat itself. This is my idea of it. They want to dream create what hasn't been created before. Because why else create if you're just going to repeat, you know? So, of course, the ancients have the wisdom and the tools we need to do that. They can help, they can assist. And it's so fun when you are in, you know, when we open ourselves up to be of service in the way we've wanted to be. And then that magnetism of like, you know, like for you, Sarah, tomorrow's right there. She's like, we've got work to do because you said yes. So then we can dream forth. We can work towards the dream of the great mother that she hasn't dreamt before. You know, so similar. It's just that. So that's when you get into that place. Then again, it helps, like we were saying earlier, to release the attachments of like, well, I need things to feel safe, you know, because my nervous system needs it that way. But yeah, if we can continue to like, well, if the goal is to dream this new thing, this new blah, blah, whatever, and we don't have names for it, then it helps put in perspective, you know, the initiation of just every time something is challenging, well, we're dreaming the dream that hasn't been dreamt before, or birthing the birth that hasn't been birthed before, and that's going to be, it's going to feel a certain way. It's going to be a lot of unknowns.
Yeah.
A lot of unknowns.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, that's why I'm so grateful for this concept of the new age and the new earth, because it's given me the freedom to feel that I can do the things that call me. So, you know, I trained as a priestess of the goddess for a couple of years. Then I went to Hawaii, and the foundation then was created for me with Pele. Just
right.
Such a strong past life link. It was just all there for me. And then I went through a few years of just having loads of things burnt away. I thought that was it, Jeremiah. I thought that was like, oh, thank God I've done that now. I won't have to do any more. Oh. Anyway, we all know that one. We live and learn, don't we? So, you know, and then over the years, and then Sarah's come, and then suddenly there's all this Old Norse stuff, like, coming to me, wanting me to learn that, and, like, yeah, reimagine it, redream that. And it's like, if I didn't have that concept of the new earth and the new age, I would feel quite confused, like, why? Why? But it's like, and I think this is the same with a lot of people, it's all the different parts of my soul coming together in oneness, and I am a child of the new earth.
Yes.
All of the earth, you know? I mean, you're right, maybe not every culture and all the rest of it, but, you know, as a whole thing, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful and inspiring, and one of my closest friends right now, she her and I had a conversation this morning of how it's just, you know, and I know you and the listeners will relate to this. You'll have that day where you're like, oh, I figured it out. I know where I'm going. I know what I'm about, and I feel good, and it's great. And then the next day, you're like, what is going on? I can't even explain it, you know, like, oh, I feel depressed, or my emotional body's doing this, and what I don't understand, and yeah, and so each time, or oh, I'm an Egyptian, that's my lineage, woohoo, I'm done, you know, I'll just study that and I'm done. No, it's this, like, just, you're a beautiful example, what you just said. Each time you keep saying yes, yes to your fullest embodiment, you know, the universe will, it takes you seriously. And that means if you say yes to, we were talking with Kathleen this week about the way of love, you know, the Cathar way, the way of love, which, it, you know, that's kind of what it's all about. But if you invoke, I am going to live by the way of love, well, then you better believe you're going to be forced to love every part of yourself. And that means that all those parts that you don't want to love are going to come to the surface. But you know what? They come at the right time. They come when your soul says you're ready for it, and when your soul knows that your nervous system can handle it. So then, you know, okay, then we get to become the divine parents, to parent ourselves through those moments where our nervous system freaks out, or our human body doesn't it's the kid who doesn't get it, right? But we know how to do that for kids, thankfully, hopefully, you know, with a lot of grace and compassion. But that's what we have to do for ourselves now as we keep saying yes. And otherwise, you know, it's, yeah, the other option is just not as fun.
Yeah. And also, I mean, that's something I've been working with a lot this year, is like helping my nervous system, because I get stressed like that. I get stressed so easily. And like pretty much all my life, I've just been getting on with it. I mean, you know, most of us were brought up that way. And also, what other option was there? You know, you had to, what were you going to do? Just lay down and die? I mean, that was all. You just had to get on with it. And, you know, that has really affected. I have so many stress-related conditions that, you know, this year I've had to really go, okay, now yeah. I have to do something different. And yeah, wow, I mean, I'm quite shocked to see how I've kind of treated my nervous system.
Yeah, it's this the word that comes to mind is this silver portal. It's a silver portal within us, and it is rewirable or reprogrammable. And so part of that is, and that's, this is why I think my gifts in some ways are in sound, because, and this is why the ancient practice of sound healing are becoming so popular right now, because it's a place in which you can calm the, you know, it's all about safety and gentleness, you know, when we're approaching the nervous system or these parts of ourselves. Someone has described it as, you know, a wild creature in nature. If you're going to go approach an injured wild animal in nature, you approach slowly with gentleness and care. And so the sound or any practice you are felt drawn to do this kind of work, the idea is that you need to feel safe. So putting yourself in that zone of safety and then watching for, and not watching so much from the duality of the mind, but from the oneness of the heart, of like there's a portal or window that will open in which you can then, you know, sort of with, you know, hand in hand, lovingly with the nervous system, walk through and reprogram or realign. I think align is the better, rebalance. And according to those, the higher parts of yourselves that have the, your blueprint of perfection.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had some real exciting times. The latest thing that's really like, wow, this is amazing, is I've been working with like essential oils on a very deep level, where you're really contacting like the plant spirit. Mm-hmm. And I came to that because so I have like a rare form of psoriasis. I only like to have rare conditions. And
because you're a Leo.
And I make up marigold oil. And I put it in the sun.
Yes.
Dried marigold. And I put it in a jar, put it in the sun, I turn it upside down once every day. And I leave it there for quite a few weeks. And then I melt down it with beeswax and I put some cream in it. And that's what I use on my hands and feet every day. And it really, really helps.
Yes.
And I was looking up some information about it. And I came across, I'm really bad at remembering names. Felicity, it's soulmidwives.co.uk. I remember that. And I've been following her work for years and years and years, like since she very started doing stuff. And she teaches people how to be a soul midwife when people are passing over.
Mm.
She'd written this beautiful thing about marigold, saying it's, you know, it's Mary's gold. It's the Magdalene. It's the Magdalene. And I was like, oh, I use her on my hands and feet every day. Oh my God, this is a sacred ritual. And I've just been doing this for years because it's better than using steroid cream. You know, I don't want to keep putting steroid cream on me. So I was like, oh my God. And then I saw she was doing some courses, and I actually have, she's got a book called Sacred Oils. I had it. It's on my shelf. I use it for reference, but I haven't actually done any of the exercises. I mean, you know, how many of us are like that? You know, we have these books. Have we actually like taken the step? No, until life gives us something where suddenly we start to work with it properly and we go, oh my God. So she did a class on working with oils for people who are dying, where she led us through like a meditation and we connected deeply with these like plant spirits. That's how I would, that's not Felicity's words, that's my words, because that's like how I describe it. So profound. Oh my God. And I was just like, God, I've been using essential oils for years. I had no idea. And not only that, but they're really connected to like planets. It's all really cosmic. It's all coming into the blue rose again. And I'm like, oh, and it's so beautiful. I actually, there's one I'm working with at the moment called Raven Sara. Honestly, for the first time in my life, I feel contained.
Mm.
Because my mum was orphaned at the age of 3 or 4. Her mother died of TB. Father abandoned her. She had no one to look after. You know, just terrible things went on in her childhood. She did what she could for me, but she couldn't provide that feeling. I'm getting it from an oil called Raven Sara. I tune into it every day. It's holding me. I've got this blanket around me and I'm going, oh, it's so beautiful. It's just like, I'm going to be 53 this year. I never expected to receive a gift like this. And I mean, I love working with Sarah. I love working with the Magdalene, you know, Pele, Isis, all the... But somehow, because it's an oil, it's closer.
Yes.
You know, it's closer. I actually feel like I have, like physically, like a mother around me. It's just, oh, it's so profound.
Ooh, okay, so a couple things coming up. One, so to tie it back to Egypt, is that we went to Edfu, which is the Temple of Horus. And I don't know if you've heard of it, but there's one room, it's the... I forget the proper name, but it's the room of fragrances, the room of the oils. And it's literally all of the recipes for all of the anointing oils. And, of course, us Magdalene people, and, you know, not everyone on Kathleen's trip is a Magdalene person. So the group of us that were looked down and we're like, Kathleen, all of these, you know, carvings of priests and priestesses and whatever beautiful word we're going to use for the middle, in the center, but carrying the alabaster jars, you know, the anointing jars. And so you're just like, ah, this is where, you know, a place where this comes from. And so to feel the history of that and the roots of that in a space that for centuries has been, you know, the walls are literally, you know, singing to you of this magic. So her husband is trained, you know, in Abydos, in the Seti, the first temple, and all these traditions. And so he would anoint us often in ceremony in the temples and with oils that he would formulate for that temple. And so I had similar experiences to you where it was just, you'd have these the smells and then the place, and then you're able, again, it's that portal, that window opens within your nervous system or within your body, and you can receive. You can receive. You can receive. Yeah, it's crazy. So it like all of us, because so much of many of us that are drawn together or part of these traditions. So as soon as I got home and I was preparing for my next sound healing gathering, they were like, you've got to do an anointing. And they're like, you've got to put the shawl over your head like you're a Mary. And I'm like, what? I'm going to look ridiculous. They're like, we don't care. But it's all of these symbols that will help, again, get your nervous system to let go. So that divine part of you that did those anointings thousands of years ago, that understands that technology, that can be the vessel to allow the blessing of the divine and the blessing of those who are there to come through you in this humble way, can happen. So I don't even know what that, I mean, it's happening and people are having an experience and I'm having experiences and it's going to keep growing, but we're all being called back to these, you know, mirror four, whatever we want to call them, the anointrix traditions for a reason. And look, what you just described, that's powerful.
Yeah, I know. And that's it. That's it exactly. In her book, Felicity says that, you know, she was initiated into this 4,000-year-old tradition by a woman in Copenhagen, just right down the road from where I live. And Felicity's British.
Wow.
And, you know, as a Myra for, basically. And I just like, God. I mean, I knew, because I've anointed people and I knew it was a sacred thing and it was a sacred thing. But then when you really connect on these deep levels, it's like, oh, It's another layer. And it's so Magdalene. It's so Magdalene, isn't it? Just incredible.
It is. The first time I did it was so intimate because I spent time with each person and would channel through some sounds or light language or a blessing for them. But it was so intimate. And then I just was like, the part of the conscious part of me was like, I just wanted to get out of the way, to just be the, you know, the vessel. I was just kind of shrinking back and I just didn't understand my place in it. My place as, not from the ego perspective, but just from like, what is my role? And then I work with the bees. I keep bees and I am just fascinated by the path of pollen and all the traditions that have come from the bees. And the bees came to me like a bee oversoul and was like, don't you understand to be an anointer is like being a bee. And you are, it's not like you dissolve. You are that bee and you are giving your blessing to the flower, right? You bring whatever you, who you are, that essence to the flower and you receive as well and you take to the next flower. So like there's this pollination that's happening that can't happen without you choosing to be the bee. Like, again, we have to be who we are. We have to not be who we think we should be or who someone's telling us to be. Funny, bee. Okay. But we, you know, so yeah, there was this moment of like, you know, in Game of Thrones, they're like, be a dragon. If you're a dragon, be a dragon. Like, be who you are. And yeah, and so that moment, it was like, okay, I'm going to step up and this is part of who I am and I have to humbly serve from that place.
So interesting. So another dream I had years ago. I mean, there's these certain dreams that you have that you just never forget, isn't there? I had this dream, there was this bumblebee, huge bumblebee came along and put its stinger and left it right here on my hairline. And I woke up, I can't remember if I woke up yelling and shouting from that one. I think I did. There's been a few. And I've never really got it, you know. I know it was something sort of, you know, what would you make of that, Jeremiah?
Oof. Yeah, wow. Okay, so I mean, obviously, there's one layer is the crown chakra. There's something going on there.
But he was here at the front.
Okay, well, maybe the front, activating the front, or the place between the transition.
Like, there's a higher, like, brow.
Yeah.
Chakra there. That's supposed. I can't remember. I look it up every now and then, but it never sticks.
I mean, what comes in my third eye is just, it's like this waterfall of light that's just, I just see you as, you know, this, like the hair goes long. It's this being that's, you know, has a feminine, powerful presence. I mean, they are extremely activating, and their sting is, I mean, they die when they sting. So it's an offering. It's a medicine for so many layers.
Yeah.
But for me, her aura feels, you know, it's kind of that kind of creator being that's in the womb, in the darkness, working that magic from that place underneath, from below, in the dark, in the womb space. She has that kind of vibe. And the bees, their home is in the dark. They create sacred geometry in the dark. You know, so it's that place of that womb where things are born, the sweetness, the alchemy of sweetness is transformed. Life is being carried out on all levels in the darkness of the hive. Which, yeah, when we think of it that way, then if we are just one bee returning home to the womb of nothingness to create, you know, we come home with our sweetness and our service to help the whole. Within the darkness to create the next geometry for what's next, for the next season, the next cycle, the next golden age. It all kind of, it feels in some ways that simplicity of just, yes, continue on, dear one. Keep being you, keep seeing, yes, we see you, we see you.
Mm. I love bumblebees particularly.
They are so...
Yeah, and... They, you know, I love it when I see them around trees and in the forest, and they're just sort of, I don't know, a bit more wild, I guess.
Yes.
I always say hello. I get them flying in here quite a lot, and I think it's because, like, outside of my apartment window, there's this huge linden tree, or lime tree, as it's also known, and at the moment it's flowering. Flowers for about a week, not that long, 10 days. And... it's just covered in this huge, like, layer of blossoms and bees right now. And so I'm trying to go out every day and sit underneath it, because I find it really difficult living in an apartment because I feel so separated from the earth. In fact, yeah, some past life came up for me today and I thought, oh, yeah, I'll have to do some healing. I so want to move, but... where we live, it's connected to, you know, Benji, he's got special needs, all of his schools, all of his respite care. Like, if we move, that could all fall apart. So it's like, anyway. So I'm like, every day, I'm going to go out and sit under that tree and I just listen to the, like, that low hum of, like, the whole tree that is huge, huge tree, alive with bees. It just, like, puts me in a completely different space. It's like... can I just live underneath this tree, please? It's so good for me.
It is. It is. Again, it's, yeah, that another form of, you know, nature's sound healing that puts us in that space of being able to receive and to love ourselves, you know, the just one step at a time, loving ourselves.
Yeah, and the scent of linden blossom, oh. Is divine. I picked it every year until the end. I had so much in my cupboard. I was giving it away. I can't actually drink it. So the last couple of years, like, no, I'm not picking, because I just love having a reason to go out there and have, like, even more contact with the linden blossoms.
Oh yeah, that sounds amazing.
Oh dear, tell us about you and, you know, what you're going to do for us. Musically, tell us a bit of background about that.
Yeah, let's do. I definitely want to recite the hymn to Hathor. I don't know. Have you read Awakening Osiris by Normandy Ellis?
I don't think so.
So what this is she translated the Egyptian Book of the Dead, which is actually, the actual title is Coming Forth by Day, or Coming Forth by Light. The naming of the book, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, is sort of a later title, but she did it from this more receptive, the translation is comes from this other kind of perspective versus maybe a more left brain, where it's sort of the older translations are kind of more intellectual, you could say masculine if you wish. So here it comes from this real magical receptive place. And the last hymn in the book is dedicated to Hathor, and I'll recite it for us all because it is my, I think, one of the favorite things I've ever read. And then I'm going to play the instruments dedicated to Hathor. So the sistrum, which looks like this, is they are the sort of, you could say, some say the ancestor to the tambourine. They're sort of a rattle. And they always have the depiction of the goddess or Hathor on them. And of course, Hathor is she's a primordial essence. She came from the waters of Nun, the great primordial water. She wasn't, there's no, in the, so in a sense, the, her parents are sort of, Kathleen taught us, the frogs and the serpents. Those were the kind of the beings of that primordial stage. And the serpents, the cobras are kind of the feminine side of the polarity, and the frogs are called magic, Heka. And they are the sort of masculine principle, but she comes forth in this way, and she is, you know, the old great mother, the great mother. She is the Milky Way. She's, I mean, she has so many titles, and it is sort of all the other netters or goddesses kind of take on a lot of her attributes, but she is this sort of original mother, one of the original mother primordial goddesses. I mean, there are many, but she is a really important one. And you see her in every temple, you know, being honored and her honoring others, which is beautiful. And the other thing to note that's so special, and I learned this from my sistrum and Egyptian drum teacher called Tehea Love, who designed this instrument. So this one is, I believe it's made here in the States, but it's she created this to be really a viable instrument to use in ensembles. So like performing ensembles, because it has a lot of power and strength and durability. And also, I don't think there were any sistrums being manufactured when she created this. There were just the depictions of it. This one I purchased in Abydos from the Temple of Seti I, that area. And it's made out of metal, and it you hear it has a different sound. So when you process into the temple, you would have all the instruments, the drums, the voices, the string things. But once you got into the temple, the only things that were allowed, the only things in regards to sound, was the human voice and the sistrum. That's it. That is what the ancient Egyptians deemed worthy enough to be played inside of the temples, which just kind of blows your mind, you know? So you know, like, okay, it just looks like a rattle. It's kind of in the key of life shape, which is cute, but what? Okay, what's going on here? You know, there's some energy in this instrument. And we know that it was used to, you know, for instance, clear a space, to invoke the divine. And then what I really learned in connecting with, you know, when you're in those places, and you know this from being in vortex places, you just can kind of communicate more easily with some of these beings. They just pop up, you know, like more readily. Like I was in the shower on our boat and I was like, whoa, hi, Hathor, you're here. Okay, hold on. But what I learned about her and through Kathleen is that she is all the mothering stuff, all the depth, all of the magic and the creator stuff. But then she's also like the goddess of dancing and joy and light and laughter and of drunkenness. So that she's a party. She's not only like the big serious stuff and the stars and the water and the elements, but she's a party. She's a freaking party. And she really comes to me in that, with that reminder, or that part of, she reminds that part of myself, because I have that in my sort of human design of to be serious. But the, you know, what is the, I think this is the gene keys. Like, so you have seriousness, and what is the, that's the sort of the shadow. What's the gift of seriousness? Maybe it's delight. What is the transcendence quality of delight? Maybe it is transcendence itself. So when we can, you know, the sistrum can do that. We can kind of, from that sort of denser place, it can help break that up so we can remember the lightness, the dance within the heart, you know, the dance within life and the joy of dreaming the dream that hasn't been dreamt before. One of her sayings is that the Tehea says this really well, but her initiates greet dawn and bathe their hearts in joy. So every morning her initiates would greet the dawn and bathe their hearts in joy. So that kind of ritual practice, almost like a hygiene of every morning. I try to do that. Like, you know, sometimes we wake up feeling great and other times not, but can I just meet Ra Harakhti, you know, the sun of the horizon, and be like, just wash my heart in joy, you know? So that's one of her deep gifts to us embodied in the sistrum. Okay, so maybe I'll play a little, then I'll say the hymn since I've just been talking so much.
I love the shape. I love the shape of it. And then the face there. It's like it is the body of the goddess, or like her aura. I think they're beautiful. I really, really love them.
They are. And there's another shape too, and I have a little charm. I'm not wearing it that it's shaped in that, but it's sort of like the mirror of Hathor. Where it really, you know, her face in those ones, it starts to become very sort of star family looking, and you can feel how, like, okay, our dear Hathor, she feels from, you know, she's from outer space.
I think we'll finish after you do your bit and do the prayer, and we'll just leave everybody in that sacred space. So before we go, I want to tell you about my dream. I also want, is there anything you want to share about, like, website or Insta or, you know, do you want to tell people things?
Thank you. Yeah, so since the last time I've been here, I've had sort of a branding change. And I always was thinking it's sort of, I don't know if it's exactly in line with you, but you birthed your Blue Rose lineage, you know, transmission kind of at the same time that I was like, what I was doing before was fine, and now I'm claiming my Rose lineage. So one of my family names is DeRosa, and I feel very connected to the Rose lineages as they are, and the Magdalene Marian traditions. So it just made sense, because I was like asking my friends, do you even know what my artist name is? And they're like, no, we just show up to the events. Like, you know, I'm like, okay, it's time to just go back to who I am, but then let's have some fun and tweak it a little bit and reclaim some of my family, you know, lineage and spiritual lineage. So there we are with the name. Right. So I have lots of stuff going on. My website is Jeremiah DeRosa, and it's D-A Rosa, because it's a Portuguese name. JeremiahDeRosa.com. Just very soon, I will be in Mount Shasta with Meg Benedicte doing a sound healing gathering in her quantum healing retreat, and I'll be holding my own Magdalene gathering on the Magdalene feast day, so that's coming up. And so I do a lot of live events, and more stuff is coming, exciting stuff is coming in that regard. And I'm always offering private sessions, and I really, what the sessions have been like these days is this bit about really learning how to divine parent yourself and get through the nervous system's gifts and how to do that. So I use sound and, of course, you know, the channeling and just connecting with, you know, one's guides and higher self to really, I just go right to the soul's blueprint. I'm like, what can we do? What are they ready for? And then I help them shift into that using sound, and just sometimes we just talk and I just channel what they need to hear. So I'm just really here, you know, I offer my hands to the goddess, to the divine, and like, how can I serve? And, but yeah, connect with me on Insta and Facebook at Jeremiah DeRosa, very easy. And, yeah, at the gatherings, come if you're in California, come. But more stuff outside of California is starting to shape up, so be on the lookout.
Exciting.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. So, yeah. So the dream that I had, I've got it in a journal somewhere, but it's somewhere in a basement, I think. One day I'll have to find it and see, because you always forget bits, don't you? So yeah. I have this dream, and I'm at the top of like a pretty typical sort of older, like, London house where you've got stories, and there's an attic at the top, and I'm up there. And I'm a priestess. I'm dressed as an Egyptian priestess. And there's this other Egyptian priestess. But from the top, there's no like gangway to go down. And there's a few things that I remember about the dream. One is that we had these like wooden, I don't know what the word would be, but like so big slabs of wood cut into the wall. And that's what we sleep on. We sleep on, they're just sort of like sticking out of the wall. We sleep on those. And we're wearing this material. It's in stripes. And it's in sort of autumn colours, like that sort of like that you get with the leaves, like that burgundy colour and the gold. And there's like a dark green. And this material, when you crumple it up, it just springs back into shape. Which made me think in the dream about a book I read when I was like a kid. I used to love reading anything about like UFOs, anything like that. There was this material they were supposed to have found at Roswell that you picked up, you crumpled it, and it would just go like that. It just like totally took its shape. So this stuff we were wearing, like, I had this dream like years, like, you know, when I was, you know, 18 years ago, something like that. And I wasn't interested in cosmic stuff at all. But I was like, seems to be a connection to UFO. Won't worry about that. And then as the dream finishes, I'm in like a coffin. What did they call them? What did the Egyptians call them?
Like sarcophagus.
But sarcophagus. Like, thank you. Yeah. I'm in a sarcophagus. And it's on top of this wooden plank thing. And I'm lying down and I've got all my, like, veil and hat thing on, whatever it is, and clothes. And I'm going like this to go back to sleep. So in this dream, I've woken up and I know I'm holding this energy. And then I start going back to sleep because that's all what we've been doing. Me and this other priestess, we've just been waking up going, oh, yeah, all right then. Now, you know, probably quick trip to the loo or something. Now right. Let's go back to sleep. And like for a really long time. And then as I'm starting to go down, back, sinking down back into the unconscious, which, you know, I'm very good at going into trance, going unconscious.
Oh, yes.
I suddenly go, oh, no. I'm supposed to bring this back now. Now is the time to bring it back. And that's the end of the dream. And when I woke up from the dream, I had Bust. I had the name Bust. And like for years, I've been looking at like what she's supposed to mean. It's like pleasure. And, you know, I've got my lovely little cat goddess. And I used to have wonderful Jake, who was, I had for 15 years before he passed. And I used to say he was an Egyptian temple cat. He looked so, so regal. But yeah. And so it's a cosmic Egyptian dream about Bass that I've never been able to find any sort of like meaningful out there. And I think it's the blue rose energy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's so funny. We were talking about this and because, you know, we have again that trinity of Hathor, Sekhmet, and Bast. And so in some ways, and it's a funny word to use, you know, Sekhmet's that, you know, she's the great cleanser, the great destroyer. She's got the Kali Ma, that, you know, that energy. And she's, you know, doing her father's work to, like, you know, teach humanity, you know, wake them up back into their own divinity, you know, and respect for the divine. And Bast is kind of, she's that, but here's the funny word, is kind of domesticated. And what I mean by that is that, you know, she's able to go into your home. You know, a lion, you can't just have the lion in your home, you know, that's a little tricky. But, you know, here, but she's, as you'll hear in the hymn, she's the carrier of her father's wisdom. You know, father meaning, let's say, the soul, you know, the great oneness, you know, and she's able to come into our lives, sit on our lap sort of innocently, but yet transmits, you know, these great ancient codes. And what I hearing from you, and I do feel this, I would project this onto Bass, sorry if I'm incorrect, my dear, but really bringing the information back usually comes in the upper channel. And for a lot of us, it stays there. And maybe we speak it out, which is beautiful. Sometimes it hits the heart, or hopefully the heart is part of that channeling, you know, or of that transmission. But here's what we all need to do, all of us who are on this mission. It has to come all the way down, all the way down into the lower chakras. What are the lower chakras? They're who we freaking are. Who we are, who our personalities are. So let, you know, and it's the fire of who we are. And you said this earlier, we have to burn in our service. And our service will burn us into truth. And so this information, if we're brave enough, yes, we all are, because if we're listening to your podcast, we're brave enough. Yes, it has to go all the way down into the earth. And Bast, I think, is what I'm hearing too, right? She's reminding us that within the play, within the Kundalini dance, you know, the back and forth, the tail of the cat, you know, the sensuality, all this high stuff, all the high coats have to go into the sensuality of who we are.
I love that. I'm so glad I told you that dream.
Yeah, no, that's pretty spot on, because yeah, that was last week. We were feeling into all of that. Yes, that's
and it kind of sums up a lot of what we've been talking about, doesn't it? You know,
it does. Yeah. So yeah, the Nile, the cat's tail, Egypt. You know, the energy system within us, what we can do with that, and how I know I could talk forever. I promise I'll stop. But what these podcasts have become, like how I see my gatherings and other people's gatherings and offerings, they are these etheric temples, because we can't all go to the temple of Isis or the temple of Hathor physically. But we are, that's not when the temple stopped either. Like right now, we are in Rachel's, we're in your temple. We're in your temple receiving your ray of the divine, your ray, right? And so that is, and then when we come to your ray of the divine, we see that in ourselves. And that's when you're in the Egyptian temples, the reminder, the teaching is that, and this is a line from the hymn, is we are gods in the body of God. So like when we're in these heavenly temples, we're reminded that yes, we are part of this. We are a ray of the divine. So they're like, wake up, remember, go through your stuff, show up, and be your own temple. Don't be Isis. Nope, we've got an Isis. Be you. Be your own temple. Be the temple of Rachel. Be the temple of Jeremiah, you know.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Thank you for coming and talking to us today. And you've been a wonderful guest. And yeah, exactly. That's why I love having these conversations, so that other people can share in it as well. Because I know it's the same for all of us. We hear each other talking. We remember things inside of ourselves that we didn't know we knew. From our own wisdom, but also from our past lives, we realize that other people are just like us, you know, just that sharing experience is not to be missed, because people like us, we've had a hard time. We've been, you know, prejudiced, people are prejudiced against like what we say, and people have thought we're weird when we're kids. It's really important that we come together and, you know, really feel the love, because we're freaking amazing.
Yeah, and we can't do the work for each other. We have to do this, we have to go through the work, but we can do it together. And like you just said, then the normalization of like, oh, I feel the jealousy sometimes. You're like, oh yeah, me too. Okay, let's hold each other's hand through that, or hold that in our hearts together, and let's move through that to, you know. So that's why, I mean, you can see this, everyone's journeying in circles now, right? Everyone's in circle and in ceremony, and that's the, you know, the ceremony itself, it doesn't change you. You change yourself, but it happens in that communal space. It's huge. It's beautiful and powerful to normalize that I'm not alone. I don't have to sit in my own shame.
Yeah.
I can, we're all in the same place.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Beautiful. Do your thing, Jeremiah.
Woohoo! blue-lidded daughter of dawn. Golden lady of the mountains. Carrier of her father's wisdom. Let an old man rest in your arms. Let him look last on love's face. Breathing love's breath. I live in light a million years. The sun rises or sets now. It matters not. Here is ecstasy in death and certainly in life. We are gods in the body of God. Truth and love our destiny. So go then and make of the world something beautiful. Set up a light in the darkness.
Hey, no, no, na, ka ua I.